Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. And while you're there on Twitter, make sure you give me a follow at GoForItGant. Today, I expect to be joined by the great, the one, the only, Willie Rofe. He will stop on by, talk NFL football. And, of course, before Willie gets out of here, we will get his top five to top five teams after week five in the National Football League. And also, we're going to be joined by Cliff Rold from BoxingScene.com. And Cliff's going to help us preview the big fight tonight in L.A., Staples Center, Chad Dawson against the great Bernard the Executioner Hopkins, which will be a great fight. Hopkins, 46 years old and still finding a way to get it done. Still finding a way to get it done, no matter the age. And when it comes to Bernard Hopkins, age is just nothing but a number for that guy. I mean, age is only a number. But we're going to talk to Cliff Rold from BoxingScene.com about the big fight tonight. And also, you know, we're going to talk a lot of football on here today, talk a little baseball, get into the NBA lockout. We're going to get into a lot of stuff today here on Go For It, so make sure you stick around. It's going to be a great time, as always. And I want to start right now with the National Football League, and I want to start right now with those teams who have been disappointments to this point. Those teams who many thought would be there when it was all said and done, who many thought would be on top of their divisions and doing some work in this league. And those teams, you got the New York Jets, who are one of them. You got the Philadelphia Eagles, who are another. And then you got the Atlanta Falcons, who are a team right now who's struggling a little bit. And I want to start with the New York Jets right now. I'm looking at the New York Jets. This is a team. And Willie Rofe and I talked about this last weekend. We said that the New York Jets lost to the New England Patriots. So I think we essentially agreed if they lost to the Patriots and ended up 2-3, that they were in some serious trouble. Guess what? Lost to the New England Patriots. And guess what? This ball club is what? 2-3. They are 2-3. And you look at the Patriots, not the Patriots, the New York Jets. This is a team. They don't stop the run, 26 against the run, and they don't run the ball very well, 31st in running the ball, in rushing. So you don't run the ball well, you don't stop the run very well. That, my friend, is a recipe for disaster, and even more so a recipe for disaster when your quarterback is Mark Sanchez. And Mark Sanchez, to this point, has shown us that he is nothing more than a game manager. And the Jets, they were ground and pound. But you're not grounding and pounding this year. Only 76 yards rushing per game. They're better than only one team in this league in running the football. That's not good. That is not good. You can't expect to win Jets. You can't expect to play Jets football and win Jets football when you're running the ball the way they run the ball. You can't. You just can't do it. And when you're not stopping the run, it's a recipe for disaster. And going through their schedule, they get Miami this week, and then they get a break with the Miami Dolphins coming to town on Monday Night Football. But then they have San Diego coming to town. And then they go to the 4-1 Buffalo Bills. Then they have the Patriots coming to town. Then they go to Denver. Denver's a team they probably should beat. Miami is a team that they probably should beat. But Buffalo, you figure they're not going to win both of those games. You figure a split there with Buffalo. You figure after Denver, like I said, they have Buffalo. They play Buffalo twice in the next in that four-week span there from week 9 to week 12. You look at it, they play Buffalo twice, so you figure at least a split on that. Denver, they should beat, like I said, New England. That's going to be a tough one. Then they go to Washington, a surprising Washington Redskins ball club. Then they have Kansas City, a game they should win. Then they play Philadelphia, at Philadelphia. Then they play the New York Giants. Again, that's essentially a home game for both teams. And then they play the Miami Dolphins again in Miami. But again, you look at it, the way this Jets football team is playing, and with their schedule, playing the Chargers, playing the Bills twice, playing the Patriots, playing the Redskins, playing the Eagles, and playing the Giants. And the Chiefs are playing some better football. I don't think they'll be a team that they'll have to worry about much, but they are playing better football. With all that being said, there's a problem. There is a problem with the New York Jets. And then you have the situation with Santonio Holmes. Now, him coming out against his offensive line, basically telling his offensive line they need to block better. Santonio Holmes is telling them they need to block better. So Mark Sanchez can throw the ball downfield. And Brandon Moore, one of the guys on the offensive line responding, he wasn't none too happy about what he heard from Santonio Holmes, and he basically questioned Santonio Holmes' leadership at that point. So you look at it. There's turmoil there in New York City when it comes to the New York Jets. There is turmoil there. Team turmoil is the New York Jets. They are a team in turmoil. They're in turmoil. There's no getting around it. This team is in turmoil. They're not happy with each other. They're not getting along with each other. And Brandon Moore, again, he took offense to what Santonio said and Santonio Holmes said. And here's what he said. Brandon Moore said, obviously, he's got the – let me read that again. He obviously has got the green light to evaluate every position on the team, Moore said. I just didn't think the captaincy entailed that. I've never seen a captain do that. That's not leading. That's not being a leader. It actually fragments the locker room. It's not productive. Those were the words of Brandon Moore, one of the men on the offensive line for the New York Jets. He says he's never seen it, and he's never seen that happen, never seen a captain do that, and he says captains don't do that. And in some respect, you know, maybe – if Santonio would have came to Brandon Moore and the rest of the offensive line and told him that, maybe they would have took it a lot better. Maybe they would have took it a lot better. Then you had the situation with Derek Mason, with him being traded this week to the Houston Texans. So you look at it, it's not fun times in New York. It's not fun times in New York, and it's not fun times in Philadelphia, and it's not even fun times in Atlanta. These teams right now are struggling, but I look at it, and I said it before, I'll say it again, the team that has the best shot of getting out of their funk is the Philadelphia Eagles, and I based that on the division they play in. The NFC East is a division that, to me, is not very good. It's not all that good. In the NFC East. It's not all that good there. So they have a shot. You look at it, the Redskins right now, their team, 3-1. Eagles are 1-4. Eagles win this week against the Redskins. Guess what happens to the Philadelphia Eagles? They become 2-4 and become a game and a half. They're a game and a half at that point out of first place. So guess what? They're right back in it. The Cowboys, they play the Patriots tomorrow in Foxborough. That's probably a loss. And then you have the Giants to play the Buffalo Bills at home. And I think the Giants may win that game. The Giants may win that game. But the Eagles, they are still there. No matter how bad they have played, they are still in the mix. They are still in the mix. They haven't played well. A lot of turnovers. A lot of bad stuff going on in Philadelphia. But guess what? They still have a shot. They still have a shot. Unlike the Jets playing a division where you have the Bills, who are 4-1, and the Patriots, who are 4-1. So more than likely, you're not winning that division. And then if you look at the wild card, either the Bills or the Patriots may get one of those spots. And you got the Titans out there is playing pretty good football. Pittsburgh is probably, or Baltimore is probably going to get another spot. So I can't see a scenario where the New York Jets could get into the playoffs. I don't see a scenario with the Jets getting into the playoffs. But with the Philadelphia Eagles, you look at it, there is a shot. There is a legitimate shot. And if they beat Washington tomorrow, if they lose to Washington tomorrow, the season's over in my mind. Lose to Washington tomorrow, and the Philadelphia Eagles can wrap it up. They can wrap it all up. But if they win tomorrow, they are right back in the mix, right back where they need to be, even as bad as they played. Let's bring in now 11-time Pro Bowler, the one, the only, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
How you doing today?
Doing very well, doing very well.
Well, yeah, you're right. They got to win tomorrow, but if I had been the coach up there, I mean, it's got to be more disciplined. You got to work on the little things, just not ball security, not turning the ball over. I mean, Philly's been doing a lot of stupid things to shoot themselves in the foot, having leads, giving the leads up. I mean, it's just been, you know, Michael Vick leaves the Atlanta game. They have a 10-point lead. They get that lead up. I mean, it's just little things, you know, things they're not doing to finish games. Field goal kicker missing 2 field goals. I mean, that team should not be where they are right now.
And, Willie, let's look at it. The Philadelphia Eagles, like we said, they lost again against the Buffalo Bills. You talked about discipline. It wasn't there for the Eagles. You talk about turnovers. They have 5 of them, including 4 by Michael, 4 interceptions by Michael Vick. But as I stated earlier, and as you were saying, if they beat the Redskins tomorrow, they are right back in it. With all that being said, Willie, I think the Eagles are still alive, very alive. But do you think the Eagles will turn this around? We know they can, but will they?
Well, I think they need to. You know, defensively, like you said, I mean, you pick up the guys, you pick up the corners, and then bump and run corners, and you got them playing zone. I mean, it's a combination. I mean, like you said, the defense hadn't played as well, but, I mean, you got a lot of guys playing totally different than what they were used to, accustomed to playing. You put them in a tough situation for not having worked together and not being together. Like we said before the season started, the teams that have had their core guys together, other than Buffalo and a couple of surprises, most of these teams that are winning are the teams that were already good the last 3 or 4 years and have put it and are still, you know, have the same system in play and are still playing well from last year. Like Detroit, when Detroit won the last 4 games last year, whatever it was, and they've kept it going this year. So even Detroit, with some additions, still had a program in place, even though they were young, with some very, very good football players. And they're building on the success they finished with last year.
And I look at the Eagles, and you talk about discipline. Discipline has to go to the head coach. And I look at the Eagles, and I think I got to put the blame on Andy Reid on some level, because I think with better play calling in the red zone, I think this team, just in general, it's just some better play calling. This team is not 1-4. This team, with better coaching in my mind, could be at least 3-2.
You're right. I mean, well, and like you said, some of the plays, you know, when the guy tried to flip it back and doing all the stuff is just idiotic. Why would you even do that? I mean, you know, you don't even know where the people are, so. You're right. I mean, I haven't been watching the games that close with Philly, because, you know, I'm all the way over on the West Coast. But, you know, I just know that they have a lot of talent. And if a team that is having a tough time can turn it around, and you've already seen a lot of games they should have won, then it's Philly. It is Philly. They can do it. Now, it's going to take a lot of discipline, and it's going to start with the head coach and guys in the locker room that are holding guys accountable and making sure they know that they need to do everything they got to do during the week to come prepared. And once they get to winning some games and get on the roll, you know, I mean, you never know what's going to happen, but it's going to take a lot of work.
Right. And, Willie, another team that's going to need a lot of work to get back into it is the New York Jets. Again, this team is 2-3, lost to the Patriots last week, 3-game losing streak. You got Santonio Holmes calling out the offensive line. A lot of turmoil in New York. They don't stop the run. They can't run the ball. Willie, at this point, 2-3, we talked about it last week. If they lost to the Patriots, we basically were saying they were done. Are they done?
I'm not going to say they're done, but I agree with you. With the division and with the teams they're playing, they're in trouble. And, you know, I mean, Santonio Holmes, everybody knows the Jets are in a tough situation up front and knows that, you know, the center got hurt. They got the guard, some young guys in there playing. I mean, so why, you know, Santonio just needs to be happy that, you know, he got himself in a very good situation again, you know, after some of the stuff he went through in Pittsburgh and got a good contract and worry about playing football. You know, I don't agree with him calling out guys. You know, everybody knows that they're in a tough situation right now up front, and they haven't been playing particularly the best football. So, you know, I mean, hopefully they can get better, you know, and they're going to have to work on that. But the last thing you need is a receiver calling out the offensive line. The offensive linemen and a lot of guys do not like that kind of stuff.
And if that happened with you, how would you handle that type of situation? You played on the offensive line for many years. If a guy was calling you out, well, calling your unit out, how would you handle that situation?
Well, obviously the unit or some of the guys would want to have some words with Santonio and let him know that we're all in this together and we're working hard. You know, we got to fix up some stuff to maybe we're not playing as good as we should have played. But if we go look at the film and study every play, I mean, it's Santonio doing everything he needs to do to help the team win. So,
right.
I mean, everybody's held accountable in that locker room and on that offensive side of the ball. So I would suggest that they air it out. And maybe Santonio was just trying to push some buttons to motivate some guys. So maybe he feels like that's a way to motivate them. And, you know, it's different ways to motivate guys. But if the group is just trying their best as it is and just aren't as talented, then, I mean, it's a tough situation. You have the guard hurt, the center hurt, and obviously losing Damian Woody retired. He's working with ESPN now. He was a real good lineman for a long time. So, you know, you had some veterans on that team that you lost. You know, and I think they're also missing Chris Jenkins up front. I know he got hurt last year, but, I mean, this guy was a load up front, and I think they're missing him. So they're missing some guys on offense and defensive line.
Right. We're talking to Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler. And Willie, the Denver Broncos, another team that's struggling, but we knew they were struggling, not a very good football team. But they finally put Tim Tebow in the game. He led them on a couple scoring drives. Look, I think Tim Tebow, great guy, great leader, but in my mind, just not an NFL quarterback. But I do think the Broncos should give him a shot. How do you view this whole Tebow thing?
I think they got to give him a shot. It's so much pressure on him. I mean, the thing is, and now what they're trying to trade their best receiver, Lloyd. I mean, the Denver Broncos have traded away, or you know, given away so many good football players the last few years. I mean, the tight end in Detroit, Cutler, the receiver down in Miami.
Marshall, you talk about Brandon Marshall.
Brandon Marshall, didn't they have? Wasn't Hillis there too?
Peyton Hillis was there. They traded
Peyton Hillis was there. I mean, my goodness. I mean, come on now. I mean, I don't understand. You're trying to build a team up, and I know the Elway wasn't there during the time, but you traded away a very good group of core players that are still elite players in the league. I mean, you can't trade away that many good football players in that short a period of time and that are still being very productive. You know, I mean, it makes it hard on your organization. So you got to keep guys around that, or keep guys like that around the team, around that organization, unless they just do some stuff to disrespect the organization and just really want to go, kind of what Cutler did because of the situation that he was put in by the coach. You know, you got to keep those guys in your organization for, you know, at least, you know, the first contract, you know, 7-8 years. You don't let those guys leave.
And you look at it, I mean, they essentially chose Josh McDaniel over Brandon Marshall. They chose Josh McDaniel over Jay Cutler. I mean, like you said, you can't get rid of that type of talent and expect to be where you want to be. I mean, Jay Cutler is a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback. Brandon Marshall is a Pro Bowl caliber wide receiver. I mean, those type of things don't grow on trees. And so you definitely have to criticize the organization for doing that. But, like, I mean, do you think Tebow, do you think he's an NFL quarterback?
I mean, you're right. Cutler was a Pro Bowl quarterback. I mean, Cutler was playing some very good under the system before. I mean, Cutler was playing some good football. He wasn't getting sacked all the time. They had a good, you know, him and Shanahan drafted him. They had a good relationship. And you see how good you see how good a coach Shanahan is, and how disciplined is the how the Redskins are doing, because they're 4-1. They're 4-1, and I don't think they're not talented. They surely aren't as talented as the Philadelphia Eagles. But I mean, they've just done some good things, and they have a system in place that he's put in place. He doesn't have Rex Grossman doing too much, and the team is just they're doing a good job. But I mean, that's Shanahan's an excellent football coach, and it's just going to be you know, like you said, the Broncos. I don't know what they're doing, and they're talking about trading Lloyd. I mean, if he's not the best receiver, I think he's the best receiver on their team. They're trading him, talking about trading him this year. So, it's head scratching to me. But what Josh McDaniels was doing, I mean, look at Josh McDaniels, somebody that wasn't ready to be a head coach. And then look at what Jim Harbaugh's doing in for the 49ers. Jim Harbaugh knows how to relate to his players. He's old school play football, which guys respect. You know, a lot of these coaches that maybe played a little football and got kind of like that Napoleon little man contract, there's a lot of egos involved in this too. But guys can respect the guy that played football and are trying to show him how to play fundamentally sound football. And Jim Harbaugh can go in there and tell those guys exactly what's on his mind and put the egos aside, and they got to listen to him because they know he's been there, and he's got a track record of being establishing himself with these teams. And he's got those guys, you know, playing for the full game and finding ways to win games. And he's a quarterback coach, so he's got Alex Smith doing the things that are helping him getting better. And look at the year he's having this year.
Right, and Willie, we got our usual co-host Jeremy Yespe. He's in. He was in the bathroom. Jeremy, come on in.
I was telling Paul. I just said to him, I brought myself in. I was on a conference call because I had to change all my plans. I'm getting ready to fly out for Romo and the Super Bowl because, you know, he says he knows more than Deion Sanders. This team is going to win the Super Bowl. So based on that, Willie, and you and Paul, I figure I must be the only person that's wrong. Me and Deion must be idiots.
You talking about Romo?
Well, maybe you are. I mean, let's be clear about his comments. He didn't say this year they were going to win. He said at some point they would win it. So you
that's
look
Paul,
at that.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean this year. And I don't think
that's going to be this year. I will say this, guys. Dallas has a lot of talent. And the Detroit game, they just gave it away. I mean, the Detroit's a real good football game. And for three quarters and early in that fourth quarter, they dominated the Detroit Lions. And they were beating them up front, too. So, they have a lot of talent, but they're doing the same stuff, you know, even under Jason Garrett that they were doing before. Just not doing the things to finish games. I mean, remember I went to the game when they did come back and finish it against the 49ers, and they played good football later in that game, and Miles Austin, you know, had a real big game. But, I mean, Dallas finds ways, you know, to lose games, but they got a lot of talent on that football team.
Here's the thing that I look at. I've been saying for weeks, I've been thinking it for a while. You said they have a lot of talent. I mean, they've had a lot of talent. They don't have a lot of talent. They had talent. I mean, they had a great team when they had T.O. They have been talented for a while. I consistently say, with that type of talent, then you have to look at the quarterback. Their defense has been stellar. You know, they have had some marquee players on defense for a while now. If you're not going to do it, if Romo's comment is we're going to, like Paul just said, we're going to win a Super Bowl, well, that's easy to say. Every franchise, in theory, will win a Super Bowl. But so what does he mean when he says maybe not this year? Well, when?
go ahead, Willie.
Obviously, he means sometime soon. I mean, if he's saying maybe not this year, he's meaning, if you make a statement like that, he's meaning in the next 2 or 3 years, basically, is what he's saying.
Well, I thought that was ridiculous. I'm surprised he didn't get more flack for that. I think for a quarterback to come out and say that after Deion says what Deion said, that we will be winning the Super Bowl, well, that means that you're almost recognizing that you're not going to win it this year because you didn't say you're going to win it this year. So you pretty much admit that your team this year isn't that good.
Well, he did not specify the year. The year could be this year. The year could be next year. But obviously he means before he's done with the Cowboys, they're going to win a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not saying I agree. I'm not saying I disagree. But that's what the man said. And I look at the Cowboys, like you said, Jeremy, they have been talented for the last few years. I mean, last year a lot of people expected them to be a Super Bowl, to get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. But obviously they fell flat on their face. But you look at the Cowboys, they are a talented team. What's holding them back? I mean, last year the defense really wasn't all that great. And Romo got hurt. And then this year they played some decent football. And then Tony Romo, you know, hiccuped the Jets game and did the same thing with the game against the Detroit Lions. I mean, they gave away 2 football games. You can't give away that many football games and expect to be successful in this league. But with all that being said, with the NFC East being as bad as it is, they still have a shot as well. We said the Eagles have a shot, but the Dallas Cowboys also have a very good shot to win the NFC East.
Well, they got to play with a lot more discipline, too, and they got to stop doing the little things to shoot themselves in the foot. Now, those are the things that Philadelphia wasn't doing last year. And, you know, and Michael Vick, when he got in the lineup, he was playing so good until late in the year when he started getting banged up. But like you said, the same thing happened with Dallas. It seems like they just find a way to shoot themselves in the foot. And that was more typified than the game against the Detroit Lions. I mean, there's no way Detroit should have won that game, and you can't throw those picks in your own end zone late in the game when you got the lead in the fourth quarter. It just can't happen. It just can't happen.
You're right, and you give the ball up in those crucial situations, you're going to lose, and that's why the Cowboys have been losing, and that's why the Philadelphia Eagles have been losing, because they are minus 10 in turnovers. So, I mean, you can't win when you're minus 10 after 5 weeks in the season. That's not a good situation.
No, really, we
look at the Detroit Lions now, 5-0 after their victory against the Bears on Monday Night Football.
Y'all jumping on the bandwagon now.
I'm not jumping on the bandwagon.
I told y'all about Detroit. I've been talking good about Detroit the last couple of weeks, haven't I?
You've been bigging up the Detroit Lions. And Willie, my question is, are the Lions the best team in the NFC North?
No, you can't say that, not with Green Bay there. I'll say this. Green Bay's going to have a tough time blocking those guys. So you can't – I mean, they got to take it. They're going to have to take it from them, but you can't say that with Green Bay in that division right now. So, but it's going to be a whole different football game when the Green Bay Packers play against against Detroit Lions. And how bad did Chad Clifton get hurt last week? Because I saw where Chad Clifton was against Atlanta, they won the game, but I saw where Chad Clifton didn't finish the game. So, you know, he's been a real good tackle for a long time, 12 years, and could have been a Pro Bowler some of those years. So it's going to be a different game if they lose Chad Clifton for any amount of time. That might catch up with Green Bay this year.
And you look at it, I mean, last week they lost both of their tackles, and they still found a way to get it done. They found a way to beat the Atlanta Falcons. But like you said, Willie, that Detroit Lions team, it's a young, hungry ball club, and they're going to be tough to beat.
And they're going to hit you. They do not care about what's going on with these new rules and stuff. And that defensive line is going to hit you and going to hit you and going to hit you and going to hit you. And then sooner or later, like you said, Megatron, the best receiver in football, sooner or later he's going to get his. I mean, you can't contain this guy all game. You're just not going to be able to do it. And I'll tell you the key to Detroit. if Detroit, if Travis Best, can, who I watched him play at Cal when he was in college, and he is really a track guy playing football. If Travis Best can stay healthy, and they have a, and they have, and they can have a consistent running game this year, I tell them they're gonna be tough, real tough.
And also, you gotta look at the key is Matt Stafford. Can he stay healthy? Can he stay healthy? And so far, he's stayed healthy, and then the Detroit Lions are 5-0 and are in good shape in the NFC North. And Willie, last week, the great Al Davis passed away, and you played against the Raiders many times when you were a Chief. What are your memories of Al Davis?
I just remember, you know, everybody that wanted to say comments about Al Davis, but I just looking back on him, I mean, he was one of the guys that gave the first black head coach was with Al Davis. He gave a lot of guys a lot of chances. I mean, people, women in his organization. So I just see him as more of an innovator and bringing the league together. And he was paying still today. He's paying guys a lot of money. And I just look at him as a guy that all the players that played for him loved him. And had a lot of respect for him, and I had a number of respect for Mr. Davis. I think that organization the last couple of years has been people were like, what's going on? But I think the Raiders are going to be okay, and he did a great job for the NFL. He did a great job, bringing the AFL and the NFL together, and him right. And Lamar Hunt and some of those guys did. You know, started down the league and brought it all together. I mean, it's been great for the NFL because they opened it up with a lot more passing, a lot more action. I mean, they're the ones, the AFC, those are the teams that started all this scoring and throwing the ball and then started taking it away from the 3 yards and the cloud of dust and airing it out. And that's exciting football, and that's what the league is really turning into now. It's just scoring a lot of points and going up and down the field, and people like excitement. So, I mean, him and that movement were the big part of getting all that started.
And you talked about it a few weeks back about the NFL turning into the arena league with all the scoring. And Willie, as always, we got to get your top five, and let's get your top five. Before we get your top five for this week, let's go over your top five for last week. You had the Lions at 5, you had the Patriots at 4, you had the Saints at 3, the Ravens at 2, and the Packers at number 1.
It hasn't changed. Right now, it hasn't changed.
Well, really? I'm just I guess the one team that I look at that's coming up, I would say, because of this NFC East, you don't think that Washington, not that they're in the top five, but and I look at more of, you think Green Bay is going to continue this role all season, not with, like you just said, the loss of a Chad Clifton? You think a rookie is going to be able to step in and do that job?
It'll catch up with him. I don't know how long Chad Clifton is going to be out. I don't know if he's hurt for the year. I don't know the situation, but if he come back, I mean they're undefeated. I can't take the champs from number one spot. They got the title, so I can't take the champs. Do you think Washington can play with Detroit?
No.
I don't think Washington can play with Detroit.
Well, I say, because I look at now, I think you're going to see, actually, Green Bay's going to slide down probably, 2-3, partially because, and I think this has been the Eagles' biggest problem, when you don't have offensive linemen that can do the job, especially back there, because Aaron Rodgers is a somewhat mobile quarterback, I think that's the biggest problem that Michael Vick is experiencing, because being mobile doesn't always mean you're going to be successful when you have a non-cohesive, non-veteran offensive line. You're going to run into a player, and that's what Vic. That's what you've seen out of Vic the latter part of last year and all of this year. That all of his talents don't translate to the offensive line not still being above average and par. They're below average, and you take away a bookend and a guy that really Aaron Rodgers relies on, and you're going to see deterioration. reason I look at the Reds is I will say, and you talked, I think they're slowly, surely kind of finding a groove here, and they are not, they're more talented, I think. You know, they have a good running game in Hightower. I think Shanahan is finding, you know, where to run that ball, and they're going to surprise people in the second half of the season, because if they can stay healthy, their roster is stronger than most people look at, especially in the NFC East. They're better than the Eagles are, better than the Cowboys are, and better than New York Giants are.
Are they better than the Eagles if the Eagles play an A football game? If the Eagles go out there and play football and don't turn the ball over and play disciplined football, are they better than the Eagles? I don't know if I can say they're better than the Eagles. I'm saying they're playing better football than the Eagles right now. I'm not going to say they're better than the Eagles, talent-wise.
I'm going to tell you, Willie, and as a future Hall of Fame offensive lineman, you should be the one to say, this talent on this team – there's no one on that offensive lineman that you could even argue remotely is at the talent level that this Eagles organization should want. I mean, when you have a quarterback.
Let me interrupt you. I mean, you had Jason Peters, who was a Pro Bowl caliber offensive lineman. He's hurt right now. Todd Harriman, who's a decent offensive lineman. But from there, I'll agree the center position and the two guard positions, they're a little questionable.
What I'm saying is, how can I take Jeremy, how can you take Green Bay out of the top spot and they just went to Atlanta and beat Atlanta? I can't take Green Bay out of the top spot and they haven't lost a game yet.
Well,
I mean, and they have the best coach in football who knows how to I'm going to tell you this. If they have a problem with somebody in left tackle that's having some problems, Mike McCarthy will make sure they chip over there. He'll make sure they have a running back over there. He'll make sure they have a tight end over there. He's the best coach, because I played under him, and if they have some weaknesses, trying to be able to cover them up. He won't leave a guy out there by himself on the island and just let him get beat all day. They'll find things to do, you know, have the tight end come out, have the running back go over there and chip him on the way out. They'll find things to do to try to cover it up. So until somebody beats Green Bay, they got to beat Mike McCarthy too. And Mike McCarthy is not going to sit here and let this guy just get manhandled if they know he's got a problem. Now, if they get all these receivers out and like they like to do, then they're gonna have some guys one on one, and we'll be able to see it. And it's gonna take a team like Detroit, because you can't block all them guys. They got a lot of talent that's gonna expose them, because who you gonna double team? Because you got those young guys on the edge too that are playing good football. So like you said, but I can't take Green Bay out of the top spot until somebody knocks them off. And I think Philly's going. Doesn't Philly play Washington this week?
They play Washington this week. And
okay, we'll see how good
Washington
is Sunday then.
You think they're going to beat Washington?
I think Philly can beat Washington.
I didn't say 10. I said, are they going to?
I'll go out on a limb today and say Philly's going to beat Washington.
Oh my goodness.
Philly's going to beat Washington this week.
I would agree with Willie. I mean, in terms of talent, you can't sit here and argue that Washington is more talented than the Philadelphia Eagles. They're not. They are not more talented than the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles have a better quarterback.
Washington has
Eagles,
a better offensive line.
The Eagles have
line.
Better wide receivers.
No,
this
no,
is a better football team in Philadelphia.
No, Washington does have a better offensive line. They got a number one pick that's playing
I'll
better.
That.
Trent Williams. They got Jamal Charles, the big right tackle that played in New Orleans, that I know that you know he has some issues, but he plays consistently, he plays hard, and I would say Washington Redskins are better up front, and they are more disciplined. But I think Philly goes out with an edge this week, and they got something to prove.
Well,
I would agree with Willie. This is their season. If the Eagles lose this game, you can put the Eagles away. You can essentially put the Philadelphia
Eagles
away.
It's a must win, Jeremy. It's a must win for the Eagles, Jeremy. It is a must win.
I thought last week was a must win. I mean, I think every week for this team lately, last 2 weeks is. My only point is this: I think this is a good Eagles team. It's the fact that for whatever Andy Reid's position is that for 3 years in a row now, I mean, he does not focus on two areas, linebacker and offensive line, and it shows in free agency. They do not and they will not go out and either acquire, either through free agency or through trades, you know, these type of offensive linemen, and certainly the linebacking corps that they need to. You see it on their defense because tight ends, that they were run up and down the field by San Francisco and Davis, whether he was used as a ploy or not. And this week with Cooley and I think with Tim Hightower, you're going to see this Eagles defense again. It's just going to it's going to be 10-yard clips at a time.
Well, if they got weaknesses, Shanahan will pick them apart. We'll exploit them. But you're right. I mean, he had Jeremiah Charter. You know, he has some excellent linebackers. He's got to go get some linebackers, and you know he's got to get some offensive linemen. And if these teams, if it's going to go to this past league, you got to have good protection. So, I mean, offensive linemen are premium in this league right now because they want to pass the football and do these different things and run this no huddle. And the teams that are winning have offensive line that are playing good.
And you look at it, in my mind, the Redskins right now, they aren't in first place in the NFC East. But I said it last week, and I'll echo it this week. The Philadelphia Eagles, when it's all said and done, will still win the NFC East. They're the most talented team in the NFC East. And when you bring all these free agents in, we don't have the OTAs in the minicamps, and you're bringing all these free agents in, it's going to take time for this thing to gel. But when this thing finally comes together, which I think it will this week, the Philadelphia Eagles are going to be a dangerous team, and they're going to win the NFC East. You heard it here.
Well, I'm going to say they're going to win the NFC East. This is a must-win. I think they put it together this week. They got to put it together this week. They got to put it together and go out and have a good game against the Redskins. But you know, they have given a couple games away. They just haven't finished games. I mean, when you got the lead in the fourth quarter and you can't finish games, you know that if you finish those games, you could have won a couple of those games. So they know that they have the talent. They just haven't done it. And they got to figure out a way to finish the games, put these guys in a better position defensively for them to make plays. For them to use their talents at the best of their abilities. Hey, if I pick up a bunch of guys and they used to play in a certain way, and I got them playing a certain way, if it's not working, I got to figure out something to utilize these players to the best of their abilities.
And you're right, and I think that's a very great point. And maybe, like I said, maybe it's going to take that time for everybody to figure out what guys can do effectively with this ball club. And I think, again, when this thing comes together, which I think it will this week against the Washington Redskins, this is going to be a dangerous football team, a very dangerous football team, a team that could contend with the Packers and the Lions of the world in the NFC. I really look at this team as a team when it's all said and done, and when they finally get all this whole thing together, this is going to be a very dangerous team. Turnovers are correctable. That can be corrected. You can correct those things. And
tackling can be corrected, and they got to tackle better.
Yeah, definitely. And real quick about tackling, Willie, in terms of the NFL right now, have you ever seen a year where the tackling has been this bad around the whole league?
I think that's like you said, that's a carryover from not practicing and getting the time in. But my goodness, the tackling has got to get better during the year. Make them tackle in practice. I don't know what you're going to do, but they got to tackle better. These guys aren't even wrapping up.
Well, let me ask you something, because is this what you're seeing from defenses or and overall in this league? Is, again, like, is this the Sports Center effect where, I mean, people, they want that big pop, they want the big hit, but, you know, to bring them down and tackle them is not going to put you on Sports Center, the interceptions, the fumbles, ripping at the ball, that's going to get you highlights and accolades, or, you know, from the sportscasters. But the tackle, you know, no.
Yeah, but you got to play fundamental football. Make the big play, but you got to be able to just fundamentally tackle. You know, then they just go back to the drills where you just practice running up, wrapping a guy, you know, wrapping him up right and tackling him with the right fundamentals. I mean, the guys, they have to do that. So, I mean, hopefully the tackling – in the overall football play gets better as the year goes on. But I mean, I have to account some of this to, you know, not being able to have the guys there and working with them all summer. But you can't account all that to that. I mean, they just got to play better football.
And like I said, the tackling around the National Football League has been horrendous, and the Philadelphia Eagles were one of the biggest culprits. I mean, they can't tackle to save their lives, and it's affecting the way they're playing. Willie, as always, man, we appreciate it. Like, so let's make sure we got this right. You got the Packers 1, Ravens 2, Saints 3, the Patriots 4, and the Lions number 5.
I couldn't change my lineup, but none of them lost. I mean, they're all winning, so until somebody beats the Packers, how can I take them out of the top spot?
I would agree. The Packers are the best team in football. I don't think you could take them out. And to Jeremy, the Redskins will never make any top five. Willie's top five, my top five, they will not make a top five. it ain't happening.
All right, guys.
Greatly appreciate it.
Hey, Jeremy. If Washington wins, I owe you a nice steak dinner. We're going to meet up at some point after this year, and I'm going to owe you a nice dinner because I think the Redskins are going down this week.
Well, anytime in Philadelphia, but I'll tell you, Paul will talk, then he'll be there. As long as I win, then he can split my plate, because if it costs money, that's not going to be for Paul. He's on a very strict diet, and that's free.
Okay, I got you.
Greatly appreciate it, Willie.
All right, man. I'll take it easy.
All right.
You're still laughing. See, you know, Paul, I think the one thing that, you know, with this, especially with the Eagles, and you mentioned with tackling and football in general, is I really do. I think that especially this season, coming off of a lazy off season, and I think where you see the most effective laziness is always going to be, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, because I mean, catching the ball, you know, these drops, some of the times these drop passes, again, that's lazy. That's not focusing. Tackling, like Willie said, that gets back to nothing more than fundamentals. And everything here, when you see the fundamentals, you see the lack of practicing, you see the lack of dedication across this week.
But to me, the Eagles' problems, turnovers, minus 10, fixable, correctable. Defense, tackling, fixable, correctable. Coaching, and Danny Reid has proven that he can lead this team and has led this team to 5 NFC championship games. So he's a good coach. Now, will I say I have to question his coaching this season? Yes, I do. I have no choice but to question his coaching, because I think with better coaching, this team is 3-2, at least 3-2. Because the coaching, as far as I'm concerned, has been atrocious. Especially the defensive coordinator, Juan Castillo. I mean, the guy has proven to be a great offensive line coach, but he has not proven to be a great defensive coordinator. And with this Philadelphia Eagle team, and they can't stop the run. That's a problem. If you can't stop the run and you don't protect the football, you're not going to win a lot in this league. But with all that being said, not protecting the football and not being able to stop the run, they have been in every football game they've played. And theoretically, if you look at it, if Michael Vick finishes the Falcons game, they win it. If Michael Vick finishes the Giants game, I believe they win it. They win it. And if you look at it, the last 2 weeks, they had the ball with opportunities to score points to win and tie a game. Last week was against the Bills to tie the game, the week before the 49ers to win the game. And you look at it, against the 49ers, Macklin fumbles. If Macklin protects the ball there, he's going to be tackled, I think, roughly around the 30-yard line, again in field goal position to win that football game against the 49ers. And then if you look at it against the Buffalo Bills, if Jason Avant holds on to that football on a 3rd-and-3, more than likely they have a first down there, and they continue to move down the field, and ultimately I think they would have scored there. So as bad as they played in terms of turnovers, as bad as they played in terms of offensive line, and as bad as they played in terms of stopping the run, this ball club, with a few things here or there, could have been a 4-1 team, if not that, a 3-2 team. And if not, with all that being said, with all the talent on this roster, I think they turn around this week against the Washington Redskins, because every week at this point is a must win. But I think this win, this game is must win. If they lose this game, you can stick a fork in them, because they become 40 games behind the Redskins. They win this game, they become a game and a half behind the Washington Redskins. That is big. They become four games out in first place against the Redskins. They'll be four games out of first place in terms of the loss column. But again, if they win this week, they're a game and a half out of first place. A game and a half out of first place. So if they win this week, they are right there. With all that being said, as bad as it has been, you win this week, you are a game and a half out of first place. So you still have a shot. It's not like you're in the NFC North.
But I don't want you to get your hopes up here, because I got to bring it back down. How are they? I guess the question is, let's just focus on one game at a time. So let's go to this game. How are they winning this game?
Well, very easily. In terms of talent, the Eagles are the more talented team. And so you look at it, Washington, I mean, yes, Rex Grossman has been okay this year, but he hasn't been great. Let's be honest, he has not been great. 6 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. So Rex Grossman has not been great this year. He's been okay, but he hasn't been great. Now, I will say this. The key to this one is being able to stop the run. And they have proven that they cannot do that to this point. But, they don't necessarily have to stop it. They just have to slow it down a little bit and force Rex Grossman to beat them. And I don't think Rex Grossman can beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't think Rex Grossman can or will win this game. He can't do it.
But Paul,
he needs that run game. He needs that run game. And I don't think, go ahead.
The Eagles, the biggest problem is, and again, I will admit this, and the Eagles are beating themselves. Like, I'm not here to say that this team is where they is because they're not a talented or a very talented team. The problem with the Eagles are they definitely don't have, I think, they're not talented offensive line. They're not talented in their linebacker core. They're not – overall, their receivers – I mean, listen, DeSean Jackson is an all-pro, but he's a young all-pro. He's not a game – I mean – yes, is he a game-changing wide receiver? But you can lock him up because he's not a physical receiver. And Patient Avant, I mean, had a career game, and look what he did with it. So I think there are, internally, there's still a lot of growth that has to occur inside this Eagles team, which you're seeing. But ultimately, this is still a team that, for whatever the reason, they're not playing fundamental football. I mean, I will say, this wide nine defense, it's a work in progress. And I think that was one of the biggest issues that I don't think anyone looked at inside this season. They shifted the way that their defense now, I think, operates for the first time in 2 decades. And I think people expected it to be the same old defense, and it's clearly not. And the response to that is what you're seeing on the field. There's a lot of confusion. I mean, sure, their pass rushers are having success, but they're not blitzing as much, and it's showing. This Eagles defense is not as dominating as it used to be, but the talent on this defense, to me, I would question why that is.
Well, you look at it again, on the defense, 30th against the run. That comes down to your tackles and your linebackers, and some say because of that wide nine. But you look at it, and theoretically, in running a wide nine, you need good linebackers. They don't have those linebackers. They don't have the good linebackers. Brian Roll, no. Jamar Chaney, no. I mean, Akeem Jordan, no. They don't have Moses Foku, no. They don't have the linebackers. Casey Matthews, no. They don't have the linebackers. They don't have it. And that's why you're 30th against the run. That's why you're 30th against the run. But you look at, in terms of the offense, I mean, right now, you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, this is a heck of a fantasy football team. That's what they are at this point. A heck of a fantasy football team. Nothing more, nothing less. But I think with all this talent, there is absolutely, positively too much talent. When you step on this field, you look at position to position, player to player, unit to unit. The Philadelphia Eagles are the more talented team here. They are the more talented team. To this point, the Redskins have been more of a team than the Philadelphia Eagles. To this point, the Redskins have been a better coach team than the Philadelphia Eagles. But I think with all the talent that the Eagles have, and with Andy Reid, I mean, again, he has not been coached very well this year. Juan Castillo, the defensive coordinator, has not coached very well this year. But with all that being said, the talent on this roster is great. There's a tremendous amount of talent here. And in my mind, if the Philadelphia Eagles don't make the playoffs, Andy Reid needs to be fired. There is too much talent for this team not to make the playoffs.
Who are you replacing them with?
They'll find somebody. They'll find somebody. At this point, you cannot excuse 1-4 is unacceptable with the talent on this roster. It's just not acceptable. You're talking about the type of talent that this Eagle football team has. It's unacceptable. I mean, Nandi Asomugha, perennial Pro Bowl. Dominique Rogers Cromartie, a Pro Bowler. Asante Samuels, a Pro Bowler. Colin Jenkins. I mean, Jason Babin, an 11-sack guy a year ago. Trent Cole. I mean, the names, they pop. But in terms of some of the weaknesses, I went over the linebackers, and we got to look at these safeties. Nate Allen coming off a big-time knee injury. You got Kurt Coleman not really getting it done. You got Jarrett Page, who needs to be sat down, not really getting it done. I mean, they are not getting it done, and they drafted a safety, Jaquan Jarrett, from Temple University, and they haven't activated him yet. So, I mean, judging by the way the safeties have been playing, you would think that he would get a shot. I mean, can he be any worse than what we have seen so far? I mean, can he be any worse? I mean, I don't think so. So you look at all this, and I say when it's all said and done, the Philadelphia Eagles get back on track, and they get back on track against the Redskins.
Well, better you than me. I mean, you believe in a team that they've been showing you one reason how they're going to be successful. Look, the loyalty's great, but honestly, Paul, at some point you do have to look at the talent on the team and be realistic. Yeah, they're talented in sections, but there's a lot of part of this team. There's not a lot of talent. There's no talent. You talk about Peters, but he's injured, so you can't talk about Peters. Harriman's is an up-and-coming player, but very unproven in this league. So where is the talent on the offensive line?
Well, in terms of the interior linemen, Kelsey, Danny Watkins, Kyle DeVan, you look at it, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's impressive, because it's not. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's ultra-talented. Because it's not. But you look at it, I think they can overcome it. And I think ultimately they will overcome it. And when it's all said and done, like I said before, I'll say it again. Philadelphia Eagles will beat the Washington Redskins this week. And once they beat the Washington Redskins, that will lead it. They'll go into their bye, and they always win after the bye. So you go into the bye, they'll be 2-4, and they'll be a game and a half out of first place. The Cowboys probably won't win tomorrow going to New England. So that's a team, you look at them going to New England, I don't see them winning that game. So they're going to be a team that will be 2-3, and then the Giants have a tough one against the Buffalo Bills. And it's at home, and I think the Giants will actually win this game, but there's no guarantees. So if the Giants lose tomorrow, they'll be 3-3. And you look at it, if the Cowboys lose tomorrow, the Cowboys will be 2-3. So you have to say that the Eagles still have a shot, because look at what's out there. Like I said before, it's not like they're in the NFC North. It's not even like they're in the NFC South, where the New Orleans Saints are 4-1. And even in NFC West, and that's surprising, you got the San Francisco 49ers who are 4-1. So it's not like they're in those divisions. Actually, if they were in the NFC West, they'd be in a lot better shape. But you look at it, it's not like they're playing in a big-time division. They're not playing in a big-time division. And I started this show out with this, and I talked about the Jets, and I talked about the Eagles. The Jets, to me, do not have a shot to make the playoffs for this simple fact. Buffalo is 4-1. New England is 4-1. Let's just say New England falls off. Let's say Buffalo falls off the map. You still have Pittsburgh, who's 3-2, who's going to be there. Oakland, who's playing some pretty good football. And the Tennessee Titans, who are playing some decent football. So will the Jets even get the wild card? I don't think so. And I don't see Buffalo falling off the map. So with all that being said, the Eagles still have a shot. But the Jets do not. The second hour of Go For It starts now. Jeremy, I'll give you an opportunity to respond to that. Hour of Go For It is now, and at 2:35 we're going to be joined by Cliff Rold of BoxingScene.com. Cliff's going to preview the big fight tonight, Staples Center, Los Angeles, California, Chad Dawson, Bernard Hopkins. So we're going to get a preview of that fight from Cliff Rold of BoxingScene.com. Jeremy, respond. The New York Jets, 2-3, not playing well, not stopping the run, not running the ball very well, turmoil in the locker room. Are the Jets done? Because I think they are.
Well, first of all, it has nothing to do with Sanchez. So let's make your hate fest, but let's clear that up. And they're not. Let's say this. You're seeing a team where in the NFL it was said and captured best on video. It's stands for not for long. I mean, the window of opportunity in the NFL doesn't last forever, and this is now a Jets defense that, it's getting old. It's 2 years from their prime year, and the effects of that are before us. which ultimately will mean that the offense either has to pick it up, and they're not running the ball, and part of that is because I think now defenses are starting to see that Sean Green, when Sean Green's in the ball, Sean Green, they're going to run the ball. When with LaDainian, and he's not LaDainian Tom, he's not LT, it's the older LT, it's LT Senior, his dad, if you will. So it's a different player, and Sean Green is not, it's pretty obvious, considering that the Jets had to keep him on and certainly keep him, collecting, so to speak, that he will not, Sean Green, be able to take over for and with this franchise as the number one, the heir apparent. And so defenses have adjusted accordingly. I think that you're also seeing, it's certainly unfortunate, but Plaxico Burress was not it was the best addition media-wise, but not maybe the best addition talent-wise. And you're seeing that. They don't have the second ring player that they need.
Well, let's get to your boy Mark Sanchez, a guy that I have been saying on this air since I've been on the air, that Mark Sanchez is not a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. To this point, if you can't run the ball, you have no shot if you're the New York Jets. You have Mark Sanchez, who does very well on play action passes. A guy at this stage of his career has not went from game manager to game changer. Mark Sanchez at this point is still a game manager. He needs a lot of help in order for the New York Jets to win. And the formula for the New York Jets was defense and running the football. Ground and pound, baby. Ground and pound. That was New York Jets football. Well, you can't ground and pound when you can't run the ball and when you can't stop the run. So you're not going to win football games, especially if Mark Sanchez is your quarterback. He can't overcome that. It's just not in his DNA at this stage of his career. Could it be in his DNA sometime down the line? Possibly. But it's not in his DNA at this stage of his career. It's just not. Mark Sanchez is not a championship caliber quarterback. Mark Sanchez, in my mind, will not be a championship caliber quarterback. And if you look at it, this is what I said this last year. I said this last year that when it comes to the New York Jets, Mark Sanchez is what's holding this franchise back. He is what's holding them back. It wasn't the defense. This was a championship caliber defense. It was Mark Sanchez. But I did say, by the time he gets good, that defense may not be as good. And lo and behold, Mark Sanchez's numbers aren't bad. 8 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, close to 1,200 yards passing. His numbers aren't awful. His numbers are not awful. But the defense is not championship caliber no more. You cannot win the football. You can't win when you're not stopping the run and Mark Sanchez is your quarterback. You can't win if your defense is not holding people and Mark Sanchez is your quarterback. I mean, look at the Baltimore Raven game. The guy was awful. He was awful against the Ravens. 11 for 35, 119 yards passing, an interception that was returned for a touchdown. They had a couple fumbles that were returned for touchdowns. I mean, he was awful. He was awful. And if you look at the Jets, right now they're 2-3, but they got a gift week one against the Dallas Cowboys, so they could easily be 1-4. When I look at the NFC, the AFC, excuse me, the AFC is tough. They're not going to win their division. They're not winning their division, and they're going to have a hard time getting a wild card. In my mind, and with their schedule, in my mind, the New York Jets are done. Some people like to stick forks in the people. I'm going to stick a spoon into the New York Jets. They're done. They are done.
I mean, I wasn't big on this team in the offseason. I thought that I think they're still a playoff team because I think unfortunately.
So you think they're going to get in? You think they're going to get in?
I think that they because ultimately what I do look at is I think that they have a talented enough defense. And their offense isn't that bad, and ultimately, I think they have a very good coaching staff. So, and when you look at who else in the NFC will overtake them,
Pittsburgh is 3-2.
But you expect Pittsburgh to be playing better. But you expect the Jets to be playing better as well, Paul. Neither team was expected to have this slow start, and Plaxico Burress is still getting. This is where teams like. This is where teams like Detroit Lions, when you get to the second half of the season, and I've talked about this for weeks now, you may see these younger teams quickly fade and these more veteran teams really step it up when Plaxico Burress maybe gets what looks like his legs underneath of him. And not that Calvin Johnson, I'm taking nothing away from Calvin Johnson. I agree with what Willie Rose said. I think he is probably in it. Right now, top 2 or 3 receivers in the league. I think ultimately you're going to see him, you know, walk up the ladder and become one of those type receivers throughout his career. But that being said, they're still an extremely young team. Where the Jets, no, and Pittsburgh, no, and I look at it and say, I'm saying maybe as a wild card. I don't think this team.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I think where the Jets, and I just said it, I think where they missed their mark, especially in the offseason, was unfortunately they went with a guy like Plaxico Burress, which he was never Michael Vick. Good receiver, talented receiver, but I mean he's going to take a year or two to get back. And their defense, you know, didn't hit, I think, the mark and where they needed to be in preseason. And so you're seeing the result of it. It's a 3.5, arguably 4-year-old defense, Paul, and you and I both know that. And they're not at the talent level of the Ravens.
Well, okay, let's look. You said that they still can make it as a wild card. So you're saying Buffalo's at 4-1 is going to fall flat on their face at some point, or not necessarily fall on their face, but they're going to come back to the pack.
Yeah,
because Pittsburgh, I think, is going to get one of the wild card spots, and then after Pittsburgh. It's going to be Pittsburgh or Baltimore. Going to get one of those wild card spots. After that, You have the Titans who are 3-2. You have the Raiders who are 3-2. Those are going to be the teams that are going to be sticking around here. But Buffalo right now is 4-1, and Buffalo is that wild card team that, okay, Buffalo could come back. You look at it, Buffalo could come back to the pack. Tennessee could come back to the pack. And the Oakland Raiders could come back to the pack. That's very possible. Those things are very possible. Very possible. But you look at the Jets' schedule, it does get a little tough. It gets tough. I mean, they get a gift this week against the Miami Dolphins. So, and on Monday Night Football at home, that's a game they should win. But from there, I mean, the Chargers come to New York. I mean, you do have the Chargers at home, but the Chargers are a very good football team. They play Buffalo again at Buffalo. You figure they're going to split with Buffalo. New England comes to the Meadowlands. They go to Denver. They should win that game. They got to play Buffalo again. They go to Washington. They go to Philly. And they go to Miami during this time. And they also play the New York Giants. And that's essentially a home game for both teams. They play the Chiefs, a team they should beat. So I look at this, man, and I say it's possible, but I'm done with the Jets. I don't think they're making it to the playoffs.
Well,
it's over.
I think that the biggest team that will be fading is, unfortunately, it's going to be the Raiders. And, I think that what you see in this NFL this season is, I think that it's a changing of the guard, but it seems like in the NFL lately it's going to be, it's a 2 to 4 year window. I mean, it used to be when you look, especially when you go back to if you review this Andy Reid era or career. I mean, the Eagles were really, pretty much for 8 or 9 years a bellwether, and it's becoming a league of 3 year of windows, and mainly. The biggest factor is, overall, is the play of, and you hit it earlier in the show, the play of the quarterback. Ultimately, teams take too many gambles on too many quarterbacks. Young quarterbacks, for example, Cam Newton in Carolina looks to be an incredible, incredible talent and arguably looks to project that way. But they're not winning. So Where is that really on the scale of where you want to be? I mean, where do these teams ultimately want to wind up? Same thing in out in Cincinnati with their young quarterback. And again, that's my question is, when you put these young quarterbacks or when you take these young quarterbacks so high in the draft and you put them on the field because they're costing you so much money. I mean, when your plan is ultimately to see these athletes, on the field and certainly making money for your organization, it really does fall down to it's a business. Wins are part of the business, but so is selling the jersey. Getting them on the field, I mean, a player like Newton is more profitable right now than he may ever be at any point in his career, and he's not winning, Paul. I mean, and I say that because the same like you're saying about Matthew Stafford.
And Cam Newton's playing some good football, though. I mean, they're not winning, but they're playing.
But that was my point.
He's playing some good football.
That's the point I'm bringing in. He's playing good football, and you could compare a Cam Newton. And example, this is the bye week, and certainly next week will be the start of the Tebow year. And these are players, that's what I'm saying, that teams took – Tebow certainly it was not the highest pick in a draft, but a very high pick on a guy who everyone says they think he has great heart, think he's a great athlete, great player, great, but not going to be a great quarterback. And now of course they turn it over to him because Denver's off to a slow start. But here's a guy who is arguably number one jersey in the league and making millions. I mean, the Broncos are making millions on this guy. Win, lose, or draw, this was a coup for the Broncos, but what did it translate to winning football?
Well, you look at Tim Tebow, and I said this on this air this summer, and I heard Jim Mora say it as well recently, Jim Mora Jr. Tim Tebow, great guy, great leader. I would allow him to marry my daughter, but again, I'm not handing him the keys to my franchise. I'm just not doing it. He is not an NFL caliber quarterback. Well, I will say this, and I said this in talking when we were talking with Willie. If I'm the Denver Broncos, I still would do this. I still would start him just to see what I have. I still would start him just to see what I have. And I had this argument on Facebook actually with a discussion with Sean Salisbury, former NFL quarterback and the guy who's been on this show a couple times. I don't even think Tim Tebow is the most talented quarterback on his roster. I think Brady Quinn is more of an NFL quarterback than Tim Tebow. And obviously Kyle Orton is more of an NFL quarterback than Tim Tebow. But when you look at the Denver Broncos situation, that's a bad football team. And Kyle Orton hasn't been playing great this year. Kyle Orton's MO, he puts up big numbers, but at the end of the day, he makes mistakes, and ultimately the Denver Broncos are 1-4 and in a losing situation. So with all that being said, I don't have a problem with John Fox and Elway and that Broncos organization putting Tim Tebow in. I don't have a problem there. You might as well see what you got there, and if he stinks up the joint, you might as well see what you got with Brady Quinn, who I think is more of the NFL caliber, is more of an NFL caliber quarterback than Tim Tebow. But with all that being said, I mean, you got to do it if you're Denver. But in my mind, it's a feel good story. It warms your heart up. It warms you up inside. That's good. That's sweet. That's great. That's all those things. But the bottom line is this: it comes down in the NFL to wins and losses. And Tim Tebow was a highly drafted guy, 25th pick in the draft. But it wasn't by this regime. It was by Josh McDaniels. So, but with all that being said, I think the Broncos have to do this, but I don't think it's going to end very well. Tim Tebow is not an NFL caliber quarterback, and I know everybody gets all excited about the drives that they had last week and the two drives, scoring drives he led them on. I saw one of them was a screen pass to Moreno there, where he traveled most of the distance, if not all of the drive was pretty much Moreno's play. And then I saw him also. He ran for a touchdown as well. But his numbers were not impressive. 4-for-10. And he threw an interception. I mean, not an interception. 4-for-10 and one touchdown. He was not that great. He was not that great. And so, you know, everybody's getting all excited. Yeah, the guy makes things happen. He makes things happen, and he's such a great guy, and he makes things happen, and it's such a great thing, and blah, 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 blah. The bottom line is this: it comes down to wins and losses in the National Football League, and Tim Tebow is going to get you some press, a lot of press. Tim Tebow is going to give you a lot of jersey sales. But Tim Tebow is not going to get you wins in this league. Tim Tebow is not an NFL caliber quarterback in this league. He is just not that guy. He's just not that guy. He's not. He's not.
No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think, but that's why, I mean, I look at this, and that's what I say around this league. I mean, I think this isn't a bad move for Broncos. They're not a championship caliber team this year, and he's a holdover from another regime. You give him his chance, you see what he can do, and I expect him to be cut after this. I mean, I expect the Denver Broncos to part ways with him, and that signifies that. But there again, you wasted a pick now, arguably a high-level pick on a guy who, you know, because he was at this glorified position in the NFL, quarterback, and certainly had good college numbers and played a good college game, but never did the NFL. I think enough people in the NFL get back to basics with quarterbacks, and I say that because, and to a certain degree, running backs, but mainly quarterbacks. I think they just fall in love with what they want to see with college film, and college is not the pros. It's I don't even think they're remotely comparable, and I think that's the biggest problem inside of these NFL scouts.
And again, I mean, I don't know what Josh McDaniels saw in Tim Tebow. Maybe he saw all the intangibles, the leadership, the great guy, all that stuff. But I don't see an NFL caliber quarterback. He has some accuracy issues. His delivery is a little awkward. He's just not that guy. He might be a great fullback in this league at some point, but he's more Sam Gash than John Elway. I mean, maybe that's what he is, more for fullback in this league, because I don't see quarterback here with Tim Tebow. Again, I wish him nothing but the best of luck, but I don't see quarterback here with Tim Tebow. And I want to switch gears now to the NBA, the lockout, the NBA lockout. I think it's day 107 of the lockout, day 100 and something. Who cares, really? But you look at it, it's going on for a long time and too long, and David Stern canceled the first 2 weeks of the season. He says now that the Christmas games, they're on the line now. So, I mean, he's saying all these things. He's saying all these things, and you look at it, the NBA, they had a great situation last year. I say it all the time, and I sound like a broken record when I say it, but the All-Star game was rated well. The NBA Finals rated well. The NBA Draft rated well. And, again, I reiterate, that was an NBA draft devoid of big-time stars. So you look at all those things. The NBA was in a good position and was a growing brand. And I want to take a quote from Billy Hunter, and he was quoted as saying this: everybody begins to dig into their respective positions, then I think the league will be decimated. It took us 5 years to recover from the 1998 lockout, and there's a probability that we may never recover from this lockout. Those are the words of Billy Hunter, NBA Players Association head. And I look at those quotes, and, you know, obviously maybe they're a little extra, but at the same time, there may be a little truth to it. I don't think this league let's say this. Will the people come back? Yes, they will come back. But I think it's going to take a long time for this league to recover if they miss a whole season. If they miss a whole season with the NBA not being relevant, that is not a good situation. And that's going to take some time to recover from. That will take time to recover from. If you wipe out a whole season, that is bad. That is bad. And I know that the big argument's been basketball-related income. Players currently get 57% of it. The owners wanted more of a 52-48 stance, and they're 52-48 in their favor. There also has been talk of 50-50, so on and so forth. Bottom line is this: get this thing done. I mean, for the benefit of this league and the benefit of the fans, get it done. And I know you got to do what's right for yourself as a union and as players and as ownership. Everybody has to do what's best for them. But at the end of the day, what's best for the league is to get this done. You can't wipe out all these games, and you can't miss a whole season. If they come back, have a 50-game season, I think they'll still be fine. But if they wipe out a whole season, it's going to take time for the league to recover.
Well, it's not.
But I think. Go ahead.
But Paul, let me just. I think this is. You're seeing now, too. I mean, this is not where you ever want to be, which was, you know, the NFL missed a preseason meaningless game, and the NFL is now canceling the week of a real season. The biggest thing that you're going to see in the differences in the two leagues is this is a league of guaranteed contracts. So, you know, what the owners are saying is, well, all your money's guaranteed, so we want you to take less of it. And these players are not used to really – and the NFL was much more of a disciplinary league. And so you're dealing with a lot – and you're dealing with a lot of kids, Paul. I mean, in the NFL, it's an older group of men. In the NBA, it's a very young crowd. A veteran in the NBA oftentimes can be 28. A veteran in the NFL is in the mid-30s, and there's a stark difference there, especially when, as I said, in the NBA, it's all you sign your name on that line, it's all your money. In the NFL, it's that part that's guaranteed, and the rest of it, it can't be.
Well, I mean, I look at it this way. I mean, the NFL was in a position where they can afford a lockout. They can afford all that stuff. But let's be honest, the only thing that was missing in the NFL was some OTAs, was some mini camps, and was the Hall of Fame game. That's it. That's it. There were no regular season games missed. None whatsoever. Period. Point blank. No games missed. So in reality, it's like the lockout really never happened. So you look at the NFL, and looking at the NFL anyway, I mean, NFL is king. They're king. They can do anything. They can do darn near anything. They can walk on water. The NFL is making all types of crazy money. The NBA is not as popular as the NFL. It's just not as popular in the NFL as the NFL. It's just not. So I think with all that being said, I know the players want to get what's best for them and the owners as well, but you just can't afford to miss a whole season. You just can't do it. And I want to take a quote, look at this quote by JaVale McGee, one of the players, and talking about player unity. There are definitely some guys, JaVale said, in there saying that they are ready to fold, but the majority are ready to stand strong. So maybe there is some little dissension there with among the players. Maybe there are some in there who want to fold, but the players did come out. Derek Fisher, Billy Hunter, and everybody else came out and denied that and said that, you know what, they're strong. They're unified. The Players Association is strong and unified and ready to fight this battle. And, yeah, you look at some of these players are living paycheck to paycheck. So you can understand why they want to fold. I mean, you live in a paycheck to paycheck. I mean, you start missing paychecks. You start missing paychecks, and you're missing out on some money. You start missing paychecks, and you're messing with guys' money. And so guys don't want to miss out on paychecks, especially if you're living from paycheck to paycheck. So I guess you can understand from that point.
So you really think now that these players are – this is going to matter to these players? You think that these players will somehow when they start missing paychecks, that something like this is gonna adjust their thought process?
I think so. Yeah. So if you start missing game checks, then it becomes real. You start missing game checks, then it becomes real.
Well, I'll say this. I think, unfortunately, I understand where you're coming from, but these again, Paul, these are kids. I mean, you and I are older than I will. What, you and I are older than probably 60% of that league, and
no, I wouldn't say that. I'm not gonna ride with that statement.
Well, we'll go do the math, and next week we'll find out. But you think about it, Paul. Think about how many young players are in the NBA in comparison to any other of the four major sports.
Well, I mean, they're young players in all sports. There's young players in the NBA, young players in the NFL. I mean, it's just two different leagues, but in terms of you look at everything, you look at the NFL and you look at the NBA, there really is no comparison in terms of how successful the leagues are. There's really no comparison in terms of the fans' interest in both leagues. There's no comparison. There's really no comparison. The NFL players had a little more leverage than the NBA players do, in my mind, for the simple fact that the NFL owners, with how popular the game is, they don't want to miss out on that money. The game is just too popular. The NFL was smart. I mean, the lockout was the lockout. They finally got everything settled. But guess what? There was no games missed. There were no games missed. We missed out on some OTAs and some mini camps and a little bit of training camp. Oh, well. Whoop-dee-doo. That's not the game. That's not the game. We're talking about practice. We're talking about practice. And that's all we essentially missed. We didn't miss games. We didn't miss games. And that's big.
But doesn't that, Paul, and that's my question, doesn't that, to me, it also speaks volumes about, and as I'm saying, the NFL and the management inside the NFL, and certainly you know the commissioner and down the line, they this was a very disciplined league, and the players and the owners and certainly the commissioner and the management knew that accordingly. When you look at and that's my point. You look at the NBA. I mean, listen, the NBA's got a lot of growing to do and a lot to learn. You know, especially from the NFL. I mean, certainly that they it's a profitable league and it's a very strong league. But their players and owners, I don't think really do recognize where I think the NFL players and the NFL owners did. Where they stood inside their partnership. And my point is, and I agree with the NBA ownership, this is guaranteed money. I mean, win, lose, or draw, a guaranteed paycheck for a five-year deal, a three-year deal, a seven-year deal is worth every penny, where in the NFL it's not. So to ask them to take less of the percentage or to be spending less of the percentage, ultimately, if you want something to give back to them in turn, just to be able to say no is a very immature thought process.
Well, I mean, you know, Billy Hunter and the Players Association are saying that if the NBA really, really wanted to get this done, that they could get this done in an hour. I don't know how true that is, but he said if they really wanted to get this done, that this could get done in an hour. 1 hour, they can get this done. Everybody would be okay. The NBA would be back. Again, I don't know how true that is, but that's what Billy Hunter says. And that could just be just, you know, negotiation, union talk, so on and so forth. It could be just that. But I look at it.
I think that this is going to be, so far this has, the NFL, and you and I have said this, ultimately everyone knew it was going to get done. This, Paul, is smelling like a recipe, and I think the main ingredient in this recipe is smells like disaster.
It does. If you're talking about missing a whole season, that's disaster. If you're talking a 50-game season, not disaster, but, you know, that's not good either. First 2 weeks of the season, not disaster. But, again, not good either. But I think if you wipe out a whole season, you become irrelevant for a whole year. You become irrelevant for a whole year. That's not a good situation. That is not a good situation. It's not. It's not a good situation. And I hope that the Players Association, I hope the ownership can come together and do something and get this thing right. There was, I mean, I was thinking there was a little optimism last week where they had the secret meeting on a Sunday or something like that, and you got the sense that maybe they were willing to kind of work things out before that Monday deadline, before they canceled the first 2 weeks of the season. You thought that maybe there was a glimmer of hope. But the reality is there wasn't, and we're still at square one. And let's be honest, the fans don't care about the NBA they wear it the way they care about the NFL. They just don't. The NFL has become almost an institution, if you will. It's like it's America. It's becoming the national pastime, if you will. The NFL is America's game. The NFL, everybody sets aside time on a Sunday to watch football. It's must-see TV. It's must-see TV. You might as well make Super Bowl Sunday a holiday, or maybe the Monday after Super Bowl Sunday. You might as well make it a holiday because everybody's watching the Super Bowl all night long. So you look at that. The NBA don't have that kind of clout. The NBA don't have that. They just don't. So they can't afford to do what they may be doing, and that's possibly miss a whole season. They're definitely going to miss the first 2 weeks of the season. They missed all training camp. That's already been wiped out. But they may miss a whole season. That is not a good situation. Let's bring in now Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com, as we preview the big fight tonight, Bernard Hopkins and Chad Dawson. Cliff, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. And Cliff, let's start with Bernard Hopkins, 46 years old, coming off an impressive victory over John Pascal, who I thought was tailor-made for Bernard Hopkins. But does Bernard Hopkins finally get old tonight?
I don't know. I mean, I think you can make a pretty good argument that Bernard Hopkins is already old. I mean, he's fought an extremely high level of competition since the age of 40, but he's clearly not the same fighter he was at his absolute prime. But I don't think he's going to be old like anyone else gets old. A lot of fighters, you'll see, you know, they sort of fall apart what looks like quickly, but there's usually reasons to explain that. Maybe they, you know, they sparred a lot behind the scenes, they partied a lot. He doesn't do any of those things. I mean, Bernard Hopkins is a Spartan trainer. He takes very good care of himself. You know, he's got the body of someone typically 10 years younger than himself.
Right. And you look at it, Cliff, I mean, Chad Dawson, to me, the guy has all the tools to win this fight. But what does Chad Dawson need to do to get this victory? What's he need to do?
Chad Dawson needs to let his own talent take over. I think sometimes Chad Dawson has been his own worst enemy. He can be a little timid when he's out in the ring, a little tentative, especially since the first fight with Glenn Johnson where, you know, Johnson really took him to hell and back. And the only fight where you've really seen Chad Dawson put in a 12-round focused fight since was the Johnson rematch where, you know, he knew he had something to fear. But I think that, you know, it almost looks sometimes like Dawson gets bored out there, like his talent's that much. And in the case of the loss to Jean Pascal, I think you're looking at a situation where he just honestly didn't know that his opponent was faster than him and didn't know how to react to it right away in the ring. I mean, he was catching up by the end of the fight, and I think a rematch would go differently there. But I think, you know, Dawson's one of those guys, because he doesn't have a big fan base, people have forgotten how good he really looked for a few years there.
Right, and you look at Chad Dawson. I mean, much was made about his decision to part ways with Emmanuel Stewart and go back to John Scully. Will that matter much in this fight tonight?
No, I don't think that's going to matter much at all. I mean, Emmanuel Stewart's one of the great trainers of all time, but when you're talking about someone who has already been a world-class fighter before Manny got to him, there's never been any evidence that you can't bring Manny in for a minute and lose him. That changes everything. I mean, Evander Holyfield brought Emmanuel Stewart in and beat Riddick Bowe. He got rid of Emmanuel Stewart, and a couple years later, he beat Mike Tyson. I mean, if you know how to fight and you've got someone who is at least competent in your corner, I think you'll be fine. And John Scully and Winky Wright know their way around a boxing ring.
And we'll see what happens tonight and how much that will matter, if it does matter at all. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, I was going to say, Paul and I were questioning, if you're Hopkins and you win tonight, now where does this take him? Where do you go at his age and out there in the marketplace?
Wherever he wants. I mean, with Bernard, if he wins tonight, you know, the Super Six will be wrapping up in December. Whether the winner is Andre Ward or Carl Frost, either one would be a marketable fight for Bernard Hopkins. You know, for the Super Six winner, bring them up a division. He could fight somebody like Nathan Cleverley from Britain, although I would see that as a long shot. But, you know, Cleverley would bring a lot of British fanfare with him, especially a couple, 2-3 fights from now. He's an exciting young guy. I see no reason that, you know, Hopkins has to make a hard or fast decision right now. He could go up and try to win a cruiserweight belt if he wanted to. I mean, at 46, Bernard Hopkins can only add to his legacy. If he got shelled tonight, if Chad Dawson absolutely whipped his ass from pillar to post, it wouldn't hurt him one iota in the historical spectrum of things, because it's a 46-year-old man. All he can do is add to the Bernard Hopkins mystique.
We're talking to Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com. And Cliff, over the years, many have said that Hopkins was avoiding Chad Dawson. Do you think that was the case? And if so, why?
Well, I don't think the juice was worth the squeeze. I mean, you know, Chad Dawson doesn't exactly sell tickets. I'm sure you guys have seen there's been a ton of jokes on Twitter this week and lots of, you know, sort of comments in media about how well this fight is not doing at the box office. Bernard's not a big ticket seller either. It's in L.A. for some reason. But I think in the case of Dawson, you know, you're looking at a very talented, tall, active, quick young fighter who throws straight punches. He's a burden to deal with. And if you don't have to deal with him, it's not paying top dollar, then why would you? Again, especially at Hopkins' age, when he can pick and choose. In this case, he kind of got pushed into taking this fight in order to get the Pascal rematch. That's all well and good. He took the fight. I mean, at the end of the day, even if he was avoiding Dawson at age 44, now he's fighting him at age 46, so no big deal.
You're right. It's really no big deal. And you talked about it. I mean, this fight is on pay-per-view. This is really not a pay-per-view fight. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, but see, I think people make too much of this sometimes. It's not a pay-per-view fight in the sense that this is not a Mayweather fight or a Pacquiao fight. Guys that you know, when you hear their name, you're going to have to spend extra to see them. However, this isn't necessarily a fight that is going to bring in the casual fan either. So if you have your average HBO subscriber, you know, are they killing themselves to see Hopkins, Dawson? Not necessarily. Could the money that goes into the HBO budget be better spent on a more exciting fight? Probably. So you put this on pay-per-view, and then it's a buyer beware fight. The people who purchase it are the people who want to see the fight, and the people who don't, and they can watch the replay a week from now. I think that's actually not a bad thing. I think it, using pay-per-view as a way to, you know, take sort of, I guess you could call them artistic fights. Steve Kim's Limburger cheese, something that, you know, some people have a taste for, but most people don't. You know, you put them somewhere where the fans can get to them, and I think that's fine. But, you know, you don't have to pretend that it's a big deal either. Like, just because it's on pay-per-view doesn't make it a bigger fight than it is.
So I mean, that's interesting that you mentioned that clip. Are you saying you think that we will kind of go back to seeing not more fights on pay-per-view, but using pay-per-view as more of maybe a tool? Because I agree with your philosophy that HBO here, it does kind of give them some flexibility because now it's on their network next week. And so they do get, you know, they get to, you know, profit from this twice.
Yeah, I don't even think it's going back. I think that boxing's been like this for a long time. I mean, Hopkins fights with, with Kelly Pavlik, with, you know, the Pascal fights weren't on pay-per-view because, you know, the Hopkins cachet had kind of lost a little bit. I mean, the Calzag fight was ugly as hell, and that was on free. Then you take the Ornelas fight, no one really cared about that. That was on, I believe, Versus. Which was a good place for that to be. Then you have the Roy Jones rematch. That was on pay-per-view, total bomb. You know, so then you go to Pascal, and in Pascal you don't have to go pay-per-view because you can sell tickets up in Montreal. But in this case, I mean, boxing's been doing this for 20 years. I mean, there's just been a lot of fights over the years that there wasn't necessarily room for them on TV, so you put them on pay-per-view and see if someone wants to buy them. And in recent vintage, Top Rank has, you know, done a lot of these kind of shows. And sometimes you get great fights. I mean, Juan Manuel Lopez, Rogers Matagua was a pay-per-view fight, and one of the best that you could possibly have bought in the last 5 years.
Right. And Cliff, I wanted to move to Mayweather-Ortiz. I wanted to get your thoughts on that fight. First of all, what Floyd Mayweather did, in your mind, was it dirty?
I mean, sort of, but who cares? It wasn't dirty like, I mean, look, let me back up for a second. When Roberto Duran won the lightweight championship in 1971, the last shot he landed was a testicle piercing low blow on Ken Buchanan, and that's not an exaggeration. That's what actually happened. You know, he busted the guy up that bad with a low blow, won the title. You know, and the way he threw the shot, it was just sort of an errant shot. It didn't look particularly intentional. In the case of Floyd, I mean, how many times you got to hug the other guy? I mean, you know, you hugged, you touched gloves. He touched gloves again. You hugged again. You know, at some point you have to fight. And if Ortiz had been on his film study, he would have seen that this is a habit of Floyd Mayweather's, that if you give him the opportunity, he will hit you. If you're not looking, he did it to Shane Mosley. He did it to Arturo Gatti. And I have no problem with it. You know, it is keep your hands up at all times. And you can't throw a crouching headbutt into someone's face and expect them to, you know, give you, you know, console you for it afterwards. It's foolish.
And a lot of people forget about the Mosley fight where he did that as well. He did the same thing.
He did it more than once. He did it more than
right.
once. When in the hell did professional boxing become just inundated with this constant hand touching and handshaking? It's an overdoing of sportsmanship. How many times in a Muhammad Ali fight did you ever see him and Joe Frazier touch gloves?
No. I agree with you. And Mosley's a guy who does it constantly. He does all the time.
I mean, you can
actually
go back to the De La Hoya fights. Go back to the first De La Hoya fight. Him and Oscar did it all night because they both come from sort of that deep amateur background. where they, you know, they were very sportsmanlike guys. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. You got a great fight out of those two, but they did it constantly in their fights. And it sort of just became a trend in the last 10 years. Floyd Mayweather grew up with some serious, nasty fighters. I mean, people forget his Uncle Roger decked Lou Duba in the ring. I mean, you know, he comes from a different school of thought. And God bless him. Those are serious professional fighters. I mean, people can have their qualms with the public persona of Floyd Mayweather. But I think in the ring, he has proven more than once that he is a serious fighter, and he is nasty in the ring. And that's all you could really be looking for. I mean, when he's been hurt, he's nasty. He beats the hell out of guys. I mean, the couple times you've ever seen him stunned, I mean, look at the cans he opens on guys. It's incredible stuff.
And you look at it, we all know a legal move by Floyd Mayweather. It was legal. It was legal.
It's just something to talk about for people. You know, people pay their money either because they're into the money Mayweather persona, or they pay their money because they're hoping Floyd will get beat, and they buy into the hype about his opponent. This opponent wasn't good enough to beat him. People were upset because they didn't get the ending they wanted. They thought Victor Ortiz was landing more punches than he was. Who cares? At the end of the day, Victor Ortiz wasn't going to beat Floyd Mayweather, and he took the knockout he deserved for the headbutt.
But was it good for boxing?
No, sir, why not? Everybody was talking about boxing after that. Let me throw a question back at you. Do you think that one less person would buy a Manny Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather fight because of the end of the Ortiz fight, or would more people want to see Floyd Mayweather get knocked out against Manny Pacquiao?
You're right. I would agree with you. Definitely would agree with you. If people are talking about
I'll also say this. I think most fans, actually, through the process of all of this, I think a lot of people became more educated about the rules and when you can punch. And I think that the more people heard the rules and the more they saw the headbutt, the more they were like, hey, you know, so be it. Some of it also could have been sidetracking because of the arguments in the ring afterwards. But again, a lot of it is just a general disdain for Evander. I mean, I don't think Victor Ortiz got cheated. Victor Ortiz cheated himself. Yeah.
And look, you talked about Pacquiao. He has a fight coming up against Marquez. If he wins, do we finally see Mayweather Pacquiao in 2012?
50-50. I have no idea. I really don't know. I think both sides are entrenched. I'm not sure that – I mean, they make so much money not fighting each other that I'm not sure that they economically need each other that bad. There's bad blood between people behind the scenes. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. There are rumors about different opponents floating around, but that is clearly the biggest fight for boxing. I'm not sure it's as big as it would have been 2 years ago. I think that it was just in fuego in 2009. You know, Manny Pacquiao walked away from the negotiations, and then in subsequent attempts at negotiation, Floyd Mayweather has walked away. But it is important always to remember that it was the Pacquiao team that appeared to walk away from the first round of negotiations.
And Cliff, I mean, I guess the only question is, though, and you have mentioned that it's been 2 years, is it almost fair to say, though, that neither team, and you mentioned this, really, they don't need this fight. Neither boxer needs this to secure either of their legacies. It's the money. It's really about money.
They do. No, I totally disagree. Yeah. They both need the fight in terms of legacy. But I think when you're talking about the type of money they're making, I'm not sure that legacy is the first thing they're concerned with. I don't think that it is possible for fighters who are at that level and who are this big in the sport not to fight each other and for their legacies to be unhampered by that. That would be like if Joe Frazier and Ali spent those 3 years while Ali was in exile building, you know, getting their fight built up, and they don't fight in 71, and then 73 comes, and they still don't fight. I mean, that would change the entire way we view those fighters, historically speaking.
Well, I will say, I hear what you're saying. I think that in this era, especially with Mayweather, I don't think Mayweather right now in his career, because if he loses this fight at this part of his career, you know, it does put a huge tarnishment on an illustrious career, and I don't think he wants to risk that.
His career is tarnished anyway if he doesn't take the fight. Because if you look at the calculation that went into Floyd's career from the final bell of the Jose Luis Castillo rematch up until probably, you know, De La Hoya, he lost, really, you know, being fair, he lost about three. Let's give him even the judo fight as sort of the beginning of his return to stiff competition. He lost three serious years of his prime fighting stiffs. You know, the toughest fight he fought for 3 years was maybe DeMarcus Corley. You know, it was very good for business. It got him into the Arturo Gatti fight. It opened up new avenues for income. But that was not the stiffest competition he could have found. And then when he moved up to welterweight, you know, he kind of got into a situation where he could win the legitimate title against a guy like Baldemir, who had backed into it on a bad judo night. I mean, Baldemir was not particularly talented. And then he took a bunch of time off. I mean, he's barely fought since 2007. I think the bulk of Floyd Mayweather's legacy still sits at junior lightweight, and everything else is just sort of gravy right now.
And he
it's a great Hall of Fame career, and he's probably one of the top two or three junior lightweights of all time. But he doesn't think in any other way, and I think way too much is made out of his O.
And he talked about wanting to be more busy. Do you think he will be more busy this time around?
Sure.
I mean, he took a long layoff after the Mosley fight.
Absolutely. I think we'll see him again next year. So if we consider that busy, I think we'll see him before another 18 months goes by. But I will say, there's a fight he could take where he could at least, you know, answer the Pacquiao critics, right? The people who say he's ducking Pacquiao. You know, let's say he went up and fought a catchweight fight against the middleweight champion, Sergio Martinez. Now, nobody's crazy about catchweights, but in this case, you know, there's reason to believe that would be a fair compromise. Martinez is competitive. If he went up and won the middleweight title, then you're talking about a different, you know, spin on legacy. Not to mention, it could even make a Pacquiao fight bigger, because then you're looking at Pacquiao trying to win the middleweight title, and there are things that could come out of that. But I wouldn't say that either man's legacy is completely secure without the other yet.
And Cliff, to put a bow on that fight, if Larry Merchant was 50 years younger, could he beat up Floyd Mayweather?
No, of course not. No. But, you know, that was a cute moment. Whatever.
Cliff, we got to get your prediction tonight. Dawson, Hopkins, who gets the W?
I think that Chad Dawson has wanted this fight for a long time. I think Chad Dawson is a very talented young fighter. And I think that he will let his talent take over at some point, and he will win a clear, unanimous decision over Bernard Hopkins.
Okay. I think he does get the W as well tonight. I would agree with
you.
I think Hopkins gets old.
Stranger things have happened. Hopkins keeps winning.
That's true. That's very true. But I thought Pascal was made to order for Hopkins.
I think Hopkins thought Pascal was made to order. That's why he jumped on that fight. So we'll see tonight. I mean, you never know. Bernard Hopkins is, you know, he's one of those handful of guys who has who can make a serious claim to being the best fighter since, you know, the prime of Sugar Ray Leonard. I mean, that's pretty much the last dividing point in boxing greatness. And, you know, Pernell Whitaker has a claim to that. Floyd Mayweather has a claim to it. Roy Jones, Bernard Hopkins, and Manny Pacquiao. I mean, those are the guys that are in that conversation. And he just keeps going. So we'll see what happens.
Hey, anything new going on at BoxingScene.com?
Just you know, keeping up, paying the bills, and, you know, lots of good stuff going on at the site. I mean, we've got some great writers there. Obviously, everybody can check that out every day. We'll have report cards coming up in the next week, previews for next weekend's Nonito Donaire, Omar Narvaez fight on HBO. And there's also a fantastic flyweight fight next week between Pongsak Lok Wan Jae Kim and Edgar Sosa. So for the hardcore fans out there, they can check that one out.
Cliff, always a pleasure, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck. And let's
Thanks
do this
much,
again.
All right, much
Take
pleasure.
Care.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com. He has Chad Dawson winning tonight. And I would agree with him. I think Dawson does get the W tonight. I think Hopkins may get a little old tonight. And I think there was a reason why Bernard Hopkins was avoiding Chad Dawson. I think there's a reason. And I think we'll see it tonight. Chad Dawson, I think, gets the victory. I want Bernard to win. Don't get me wrong. I want Bernard Hopkins to win this fight.
Well, Paul,
but I'm not sure he will. Go ahead.
Well, it's a shame. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, you have to be realistic. This isn't – he's 46, but this isn't a guy, Paul, who you know, you shouldn't expect him to be anything less than Bernard Hopkins. He has not yet walked into, you know, the ring and been anybody else than who he is. He's a great fighter. And I think that you have to give him the respect. Yeah, he's 46, but he still hasn't had the first – I mean, he had a loss, but he has not been defeated, totally defeated.
Yes, he hasn't been dominated, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you had the situation with Calzaghe. Many argue that he won that fight. Many can make an argument that he won the Calzaghe fight, his last loss, his last loss. Many could say he won that fight. But Bernard Hopkins has not been dominated. Every fight, you could say legitimately that Bernard Hopkins should have won or was the winner in that fight. You could make a legitimate argument that Bernard Hopkins was the winner in his last few fights, the ones that he lost. The one that he lost, which was against Joe Calzaghe, and before that it was those two fights against Jermaine Taylor. I mean, you could make an argument that he won both of those fights. So with all that being said, Bernard Hopkins, he defies logic. I mean, age really isn't – it's just nothing but a number when it comes to Bernard Hopkins. And as Cliff said, you look at his body. That's a 46-year-old man walking around with a body of a 21, 22, 23, 4, 23, 24-year-old man. I mean, his body is impressive. I mean, I'm jealous. I am jealous of Bernard Hopkins' his body. I mean, the guy is fit. He's trim. I mean, he's in shape. He is in big-time, tip-top shape. The guy keeps himself fit, trim, and in shape, and you can't argue with that. 46 years old, and if he takes your shirt off and I take my shirt off, I would need to put my shirt back on. And I'm 11 years younger than Bernard Hopkins. And so the guy is flat out amazing. He defies logic. He really does defy logic. The body is impressive. Could you take your shirt off and beat Bernard Hopkins in terms of body?
I wish I could, Paul.
I mean, you know, I'm a little jealous of Bernard Hopkins. Bernard, if you're listening, and we want to get you on the show at some point. Bernard, if you're listening, I am jealous of you. I'm jealous of you, Bernard Hopkins. I want to have a Bernard Hopkins-like body, but I don't want to eat a whole bunch of vegetables to do it. So we got to find something else that we can do, Bernard. But, you know, I don't want to eat a whole lot of vegetables, Bernard. I mean, I know you're a vegetarian, you don't eat a lot of meat, but goodness gracious, Bernard, I mean, I don't want to do all that, but I want to find a way to kind of backdoor it. HGH. Just kidding. But Bernard Hopkins, I mean, the guy is just flat out amazing. And as Cliff said, I thought John Pascal was tailor-made for Bernard Hopkins. John Pascal is a home run hitter. He's a home run hitter, and all he goes for is home runs. And that's what he did the first time around. That's what he did the second time around against Bernard Hopkins. And the first time was a draw, but many thought Bernard won. The second time, Bernard Hopkins got it done, and got it done in impressive fashion. But does the Bernard Hopkins ride, does it end here? Does it end here? We shall see. We shall see. See, does it end here? We shall see. We shall see. We shall see. It's been a magical ride for Bernard Hopkins, a very magical ride, the magic carpet ride for Bernard Hopkins. But ultimately, at some point, it got to come to an end. And I agree with Cliff Rold of BoxingC.com. I think it ends tonight against Bad Chad Dawson. I just don't know if I'm going to pay the $54.99 to watch it. I don't think I'm going to pay the $54.99 to watch it. I will wait until next week to watch the fight. That's what I am going to do. I want to thank Willie Rofe for stopping by. Make sure you follow Willie on Twitter at Willie_Rofe. Also, I want to thank Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com. Make sure you go to BoxingScene.com. If you like boxing and you want to know about boxing and read up on boxing, go to BoxingScene.com. It's a great website for boxing. They do a great job over there, BoxingScene.com. I watch and I read, I should say, BoxingScene.com on a regular, every day. iReadBoxingScene.com. It's a great, great, great website. Check it out. If you love the sport of boxing, make sure you check it out. And you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgame, where you can listen to this great show and other great shows. And also, please follow me on Twitter at GoForItGan, where you can see and hear and read some of my great things that I like to talk about. So make sure you follow me on Twitter at GoForItGan. For Jeremy Espy and everybody here at GoFort, fighting a cold here, but I got through. See you later. Take care. Bye.